You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 162 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and U.S. Rider. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse, brought to you in cooperation with Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
On today's show, we're sitting down with Retired Racehorse Project's Executive Director, Kirsten Green, to get the inside scoop on how the 2025 Thoroughbred Makeover celebrated its 10th anniversary and what's coming up next for the RRP. And Amanda Grace is back from New Vocations with her makeover recap, a new training tip, and a new adoptable horse of the week. Stay tuned.
And they're off on Retired Racehorse Radio, the podcast that is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse.
This is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York.
And this is Lee Beamer in Withville, Virginia, and you're listening to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Lee, was that a double bridle I saw on your little mare the other day?
Oh, Kristen, it was. We have had two rides in the double now, and it is very exciting. I'm feeling very legit.
That's I know enough about dressage to know that's a big deal. That's about where my knowledge of it ends. But I'm like, oh my God, she's so grown up now. She's got the double bridle on.
It's so exciting. Yeah. So the double comes into play at third level, which we're starting to kind of school things towards that this winter. And I actually found it for real cheap at the last show we were at. So I thought, well, I might as well get it while it's here.
Basically free at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, if I do the math on this, this bridle is basically free. So I had to get it, obviously.
yeah, you're gonna lose money if you didn't buy it. So obviously, yes.
Exactly. And then I also found some basically free bits. So, I mean, I think I came out ahead, but it's been really fun. And Finn is, of course, taken to it surprisingly well. So it's exciting.
That's brilliant. I love that. Yeah. I have to imagine that your horse show tack shopping experience is probably different from mine, because the last show I went to where there was some tack for sale, it was this guy, I don't remember, I feel like his name was Wyatt, which makes it way funnier. And he had like a culture wall beard and an old cowboy hat and an old truck.
Oh, nice.
Expertly restored, and he spread out a blanket and then just unloaded all of this crap, saddles, bits. I mean, probably two queen bed worth space on this tarp of bits. And I was like, oh, heck yeah. So I just browsed around, and I was like, this man looks like he just came out of the earth selling old cowboy tack. So
yeah, it sounds like a very authentic experience.
It was, yeah. You know, and I bought a bunch of bits that I later figured out were not actually show legal for what I was doing, but they look really cool on the wall. So I'm like, whatever.
Well, if it doesn't work for the horse, it's always good decor. So
yeah, it looks nice. So I can ride around at home in it.
Right. No one will ever know.
Yeah. You know, we should have a bit and bidding. You know, we always get requests for shows about bits and bidding. And we've had Jody Bush on before to talk about the Basel Hackamore and the spade bit, what we call straight up in the bridle in the ranch and range cow horse world. But we should have some dressage folks on to talk about the double bridle, because I think that would be good education for me. And this is mostly how we choose guests for this show, is just things I want to learn about. And I just assume everybody else wants to learn about the same things. So
yeah, of course. Yeah, that would be interesting. That's a whole wide world of, different bits and what works. And Finn and I actually went through a little bit of that this summer. Finding another snaffle bit. It's a bit of a fiasco, but we got it straightened out. But I'm always there's so much out there now, it's hard to know kind of where to start. So if you're interested in that, let us know. We'll try to find somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. You know where to find us. You can email me at kristen@horseradionetwork.com or just slide into our DMs. That's how we get a lot of our cool topic ideas, which I love. So yeah, you've had a much more exciting fall than I have. So my life is just treating Shorty for Lyme disease and kind of hanging out. So
is that a new development?
Like a little bit new. I can't remember what we actually have talked about and haven't anymore because all the weeks have run together because I'm now like in my post makeover, like permanent hangover. So,
right.
But yeah, I think this is relatively new. It is new actually because we just started treating him right before I left for Kentucky. And then my mom and my husband had to carry on the treatment while I was gone, which was really fun for all of them. But fortunately, Shorty is not the brightest bulb and he'll eat anything. So he was eating like tablets, like they were M&Ms. So, that was great for him because he was getting 50 of those in a feeding twice a day. And he was just like, crunch, 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 like these are weird, you know, and just kept going. So bless him, you know, and now we switched over to a compounded powder, which is a lot easier. And I think we have 3 weeks left of that. So, if you've been listening to the show, you know, all year, like we've sort of been on this meandering path trying to figure out like, why is Shorty the way that he is? And I've gotten some really good suggestions from listeners. Shout out to Shannon Quashi, who actually, gifted me a subscription to, like a training and horsemanship channel, about like body lameness, which I was like, this is exactly Shorty's problem. And I just have kind of slacked off and gotten too busy and haven't gotten time to like watch the videos and do the courses yet, but I'm looking forward to diving into that to learn a little bit more. Cause I do think that once he bounces back from the Lyme, we're going to be doing a lot of like physiological, like retraining and sort of like reprogramming him come out of those pathways he's always been in. So, that's what I'm looking forward to that this winter. We'll see if it goes the way I would like it to, but, I was like, let's just investigate the Lyme as, you know, one of many bits of spaghetti you can throw at the wall. And he came back with like a, not like an overwhelming positive, but definitely worth treating. So, so that's fun for us. And then like, so I found a tick on me the other day. So I also was on doxycycline briefly because they just want everybody to do that now if you find a tick on you. So I was like, hey, doxy buddy, you know, so we're hanging out, chatting about meds together, you know, and he's like, this is great. And just ate them all up. So,
right. Is it easy for you to take the pills like him?
I also like candy. Much like Shorty, I have to take it with food because I'm really weird about swallowing pills, which we discovered at the makeover, like a bunch of us in the house all needed like nightly ibuprofen because everyone was getting like raging dehydration headaches. And I was like, well, hang on. This is why I bring gummy bears. So I need to eat two gummy bears and then chuck the pills down at the last minute. So,
oh goodness.
Yeah. It's not as bad as like I don't have to put it in like a piece of cheese like a dog, but it's pretty close. So.
Right. Well, that's a good trick though. Two gummy bears will do it.
Yeah. Two gummy bears, two ibuprofen. We are good to go. So,
right.
Yeah. But I just am like in my makeover hangover, so we're mostly. I know we did go for a ride last night, and the temperatures dipped. I don't know if it's you've gotten like some sudden seasonal weather in Virginia, but it's
a little bit.
Yeah, it's gotten like way into pumpkin spice season here, which is what I call it when Jobber's fresh because he's orange. So all three of us rode. So me and Eric and my mom. So mom's on the standardbred and she's been using a side pole. And I was like, okay, like we're going to keep an eye on the side pole. And if I feel like he is taking advantage of that, like especially in chilly season, then we're going to switch him back to a snaffle. And she was like, okay, that's fine. You know, so I sent her off to trot first. And of course, he immediately throws his head down. And in the side pull, she's got no leverage to get his head back up. No. So I was like, oh, mom. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then Shorty is prone. He'll like hump his back up and then like kind of like pony buck around sometimes. And it's very, the only pattern we can find is if Eric like goes to dismount a little too hastily and might stab him with a toe as he's getting down.
Yeah.
You know, because in a Western saddle, you step down. Like English, you pop both feet out and swing and land, but in Western you tend to step down. So he had stepped down to try to get a limb off of a fence that we were checking, and Shorty's like boing boing and like, you know, pogo leaping around us. You know, we figured light work is still good for Shorty even though he's being treated for Lyme, although we second guessed that last night as he's like careening about. And then Jobber did not openly have a fit, but he had that sort of like boiling pot of water feel the whole time. And I was like, this is great. So we're making our way back across the pasture, and I see our brother-in-law and the my 5-year-old nephew coming across the field, and the nephew sees us and just takes off running, you know, because he's like, ooh, the horses. And I was like, hey, maybe not tonight. You know, because I was like, oh my gosh, like this kid's gonna run at us and we're all about to die. So got the kid turned off at the last minute. I was like, sorry, come see them in the barn. They'll be much better behaved. Like, but please do not run at us this evening. We're all gonna have a wreck. So
it'll be a big rod.
I was like, oh, this is gonna get real Western. The kid's gonna love that. So
Yeehaw.
I know. Yeah.
It's the season for that though.
I guess so. It's the season for something. So it is a season for us to have all sorts of weird tie-ins with the sponsors of today's show, actually, because I looked and I was like, oh, hey, U.S. Rider. I got to use my U.S. Rider membership for the first time this week. So that was fun. I didn't have my truck and I didn't have my trailer and horses on, which was great because when I called, like, I hadn't used it before. Like, I've had AAA before, and U.S. Rider is, you know, the equestrian's equivalent because it will take care of your horses and your trailer if you have a problem with your truck hitch, but they also will apply to any vehicle. So you don't have to have your truck and trailer on, which was good because I went to the post office and my truck wouldn't start. And I was is cool. So called them, and of course the rep was so nice. Like, right off the bat, she's like, are you and your horses safe? And I was like, yes, because my horses are not with me. Like, this is totally fine. Like, everything's great. And she was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, like, very conversational, real chatty. I was like, it's not an emergency. I mean, it's annoying, but, like, you know, just send a guy when you can. And they networked me a tow truck and a jump. The jump didn't work because it turned out it has a bad starter, but that got towed. And I was like, cool. Well, thanks, Rochelle at US Rider. So, and also thank you to them for sponsoring this episode. So,
we
always love when we can, you know, support our sponsors. Obviously, I would like to not break my truck again, but, you know, it'll happen. So
it sounds like best case scenario. And I feel like I've also had that happen with a truck at the post office. So
it's the post office,
must be a post office thing.
Something about the post office just breaks trucks. You gotta look out for that.
You do have
U.S. Postal Service. If you'd also like to sponsor us, we will, we'll be in touch.
We'll take it. And, also, speaking of sponsors, you and I kind of chatted about this briefly. I took Finn for like a post-season kind of sports horse eval at Virginia Tech the other week. And one of the things the vet there recommended was to start her on Elevate from KPP, which is their vitamin E supplement. So we just started that, I think, last week. And so far, she's really liking it. She's very picky, too. So it's huge that she is just acting like it's no big deal. So we'll see how it goes. I'm excited to see the difference it makes in her.
Mm, love that. I do notice the KPP supplements seem to be really palatable to horses, which I appreciate. Because Shorty's now, he's on their probiotic. It's their Probiotic Wise from the vet line. I have to get that through my vet. But he's on that while he's on the Doxy twice a day, you know, to support the good gut microbes. So yeah, he's a two scooper, one scoop of meds, one scoop of probiotic. But he seems to like that, and it smells nice. I don't know if I'm supposed to inhale it, but I'm like, oh, this smells great. So shout out to KPP.
keeping everybody healthy.
Something like that. Well, let's hear from that premier sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products, in their own words.
Is your horse suffering from digestive tract issues such as diarrhea, colic, or hindgut imbalances? Does he need a high-grain diet? Is he under stress? Nalox Advance can help. Nalox Advance is a scientifically formulated blend of ingredients that works synergistically to maintain a healthy stomach, small intestine, and hindgut. It contains long-acting gastric buffers and coating agents to maintain a normal stomach pH. It provides an effective probiotic to support complete digestion of starch and sugars in the foregut, helping maintain a healthy hindgut. And it supplies broad-spectrum prebiotics to sustain a healthy balance of beneficial microbes and well-balanced microbiome. For more information, visit kppusa.com or call 859-873-2974.
Well, Lee, we are post makeover. We already touched on this a little bit when we opened the show, how I'm still hungover, but everything is fine. I'm just carrying on like I do through October. But we have with us Kirsten Green, the executive director of the Retired Racehorse Project, to give us her take on how everything went. So Kirsten, welcome back to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So I know, you know, we've had you on before to chat about stuff that RRP is doing. You know, and of course, your perspective is a little bit different from mine. So it's always useful to have two of us here. So Lee can keep us organized if we, you know, get way off the rails on how the show went. But yeah, from your perspective, from, you know, executive director who drove the whole ship, how did it go?
I mean, I think overwhelmingly it was a good year. I have always been kind of cognizant of the fact that there's like more than one version of the event. Like there's the version of the event that the public experiences, and then there's the version of the event that the organizers experience. And sometimes those are very different. But I think, you know, if the staff has a bunch of hurdles to overcome and the public still has, generally speaking, a pretty good time, I think that says a lot about the staff and their kind of grit to get things done when it counts. And this was just one of those years where we just experienced some setbacks and hurdles kind of logistically, operationally, that like we couldn't have anticipated. We got rained out on a setup day, which is also the big ticketed schooling day for competitors, and had to cut the day a little bit short when they finally started calling for flash flood warnings, which is pretty unprecedented for us this time of year. We've never dealt with that.
Yeah, I want to say it's not like, oh, we got rained out, it was sprinkling. Like, it was like biblical levels of rain. Like,
yeah,
I think that like there was a swath that went over the horse park that got 4.5 inches of rain, which is just a bonkers amount of water.
Yeah. And I've never personally experienced it, but the horse park like can flood pretty significantly, like roadways and stuff like that, because there's like a little creek that runs kind of throughout the front of the park and like lower spots and that sort of thing that like will be consumed by water. And I think if it had gone on much longer, we would have been in that territory. So that definitely like set us back a little bit in terms of just having everything that we needed to have done and better situated for when competition actually started on Wednesday. And like, if you've ever been to the makeover, you know, like competition officially starts on Wednesday, but like we're busy on Tuesday. There's competitors rolling in, arrival exams going on. We still have plenty of set up things that need to be kind of finished up. Our vendors are supposed to move into vendor fair on Tuesday. So all of that got a little bit grenaded for us, for lack of a better word. So, yeah, we learned some things and we muscled through. And, you know, you can't really do anything about the weather. We've just been exceptionally lucky for 10 years. So, you know, that was a little bit tough to deal with. And we had some problems with our website that we tried to remediate prior to the event. And those kind of interventions weren't sufficient enough. So we really had a bit of a undertaking to try to slog through with our website not being up to par, which we acknowledged kind of halfway through the week. But, you know, to the other end of that, overwhelmingly, like, and like in passing, like I was just getting competitors that were just incredibly gracious about all of it, first and foremost. Like, it really sucks for everybody when a website doesn't function well. It's not just hard on us. It's hard on the experience for the competitors and everything. And we just had like an exceptionally gracious group of people that were really patient and understanding. And they didn't have to be, but they were. And I got a lot of people that were just really happy to be there. And, you know, by the time we got to the end of the week with some of the format changes and stuff with our championships and having our vendor fair outside, like, it was really gratifying to see. It felt like the space in the event was vibrant in a way that we hadn't seen and was kind of hard to really capture when we were in the covered arena so often. You know, we just had really great attendance on Saturday. The vendor fair looked vibrant. You know, everybody that I talked to in passing really enjoyed the format change and being kind of in their original venues and having individual championships. You know, our survey is out right now, so we'll see if the survey kind of supports that anecdotal evidence. But I think we got a lot right, and otherwise we learned a lot of things. And I think this organization definitely has a track record for just kind of evaluating and tweaking and always being willing to make adjustments to better the product. So it was just one of those years.
Yeah, like, you know, I joked on Tuesday, like, yeah, you know, in 10 years of the makeover being in Kentucky, because of course it was the 10-year anniversary, like, we have gotten really lucky with the weather, but I think we got 10 years worth of rain in 12 hours. So that should carry us over for another 10 years, hopefully.
It better, yeah.
It'd be nice. Yeah, I don't think I've been wetter in my life, like, while wearing clothing. So
no,
Yeah.
Like there's just a point at which, like, no matter how good your rain gear was, like, particularly for me, like, I had a pretty decent raincoat, but like by the time like it was fully soaked, like it was just like puddling on the hems of my sleeves and the hems of the jacket that it was kind of like coming up under at that point. Like, yeah, there was no winning at all. It really was something.
Yeah, we made it through. It did make the rubber duck thing that much cuter. There was a competitor who was running around, and we figured out who it was by the end of the week, but she called her horse Ducky, I think, in the barn. And I don't know how many hundreds of like tiny little rubber ducks she brought, but she was ducking surfaces. Like, so everyone's golf cart got multiple ducks during the week. I actually got one, which was exciting because I was never in one place long enough for anybody to find me. So I think I got one by Friday. But it was a lot funnier with how wet the week started. I was like, well, these ducks are pretty fitting. So. Yeah. But that was such a nice example, too, of like the competitors really making the most of it. Like, despite the absolutely miserable conditions on Tuesday, everyone was so cheerful. I could not believe how cheerful people were. They were just happy to be there, like rain or no rain.
Yeah.
The vet students, maybe not so much. They looked pretty miserable, but...
I think they even still had a really good time. I mean, they all worked really hard to be there and partake in that process. And so I think everybody was like, I'm going to enjoy it no matter what.
Right.
And it's also good prep for beyond the makeover because the show must go on even if there is rain. So kind of giving them next level experience. But I do remember the weather was so great when I was there. So really stinks that you guys got it all this year, but made the best of it for sure.
Not on a competition day, at least. Like, we got that out of our system by Tuesday night, thank goodness. So
yeah, like I found myself saying though, like I kind of would have preferred it was a competition day sometimes, just because of like logistically all the things that got kind of like bottlenecked on Tuesday because of the rain. Like,
true,
we had room in the schedule on competition days, like if we needed to do a delay or something like that, like we could have. I probably shouldn't be saying any of this out loud at this point. Just
I was going to say that's spoken like a person without any camera equipment outside. So
further first us. Well, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and again, everybody experiences it through a different lens, like no pun intended, but,
Ayo, good one.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take it like for better or worse, like it could have been worse.
Yeah. Well, the videos and pictures were crazy that I kept seeing in the Facebook group. I mean, my goodness, needed some boats.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we had some rough spots. We made it through, you know, as you mentioned, like we always take all that feedback and we'll make it better. So we definitely have a list. I have a list of things I jotted down to be like, fix this for next year. And I'm sure you did too, Kirsten. So,
yeah, we'll, it was started like probably on Saturday prior.
Yeah. Yeah. Find keys to storage unit before getting to storage unit. But that was fine. That was fun. We had a good time. And then, yeah, as far as like the actual competition goes, you know, like you and I are constantly moving around, sort of wearing many hats at the makeover. So we rarely get to just sit and watch. But from the competition standpoint, from what you did get to see, like, how did that look?
I mean, I think, you know, to your point, we don't get to sit still and take in very much. And this was, for me particularly, especially one of those years. But I got, you know, a lot of commentary from officials, and other competitors that just the horsemanship this year and, the riding was just really strong. And again, just a lot of appreciation for, the format changes and being able to go in, to the venues that they were in prior, for the championship day on Saturday, really seemed to be the kind of like horse and competitor forward decision. It just seemed like the horses that were there in the championships were very comfortable to be there. There wasn't a lot of like kind of like anybody looking particularly impressed by what was going on around them. You know, so that's just what we want to see. Like, we don't want to get to Saturday and have it be kind of like a bogey where you're coming into a covered arena and you've got a bunch of stuff that to contend with that you didn't have to previously. So generally speaking, like even for the handful of disciplines that did move, like they were in kind of parts of the overall facility that were more familiar to them from throughout the week. than maybe the covered arena might have been. So I think it's just a much better atmosphere too. Like, it's just light and bright and, you know, not as like kind of shut off from the rest of the world. So yeah, I mean, I think a good year, good results for people, just a good showing in terms of results for people and kind of positive experiences and that sort of thing, which is really, you know, at the end of the day, what we're most concerned with. Like, we're not expecting everybody to be competitive. We just want to make sure that everybody has a good time, a positive experience. And I feel like we were able to achieve that for folks.
Yeah. Now, to your point, you know, about like people coming all the way through, you know, we've had, I think, I don't want to say declining numbers. It does seem like the number of people applying are a little bit on a downward trend. But, you know, as we've noticed every year, we actually have a better retention rate. And yeah. I think that translates in the riding and the horsemanship as well.
Yeah.
So what do you think kind of going forward? Like, what can we expect? I think we ended up with like 240 horses, which is still plenty of green thoroughbreds in one location. Like, we don't necessarily need a lot more than that, yeah. just for the chaos levels. But, you know, what are you thinking? Like, what are some changes you might see coming down the pike for the makeover in the future?
I think for us, you know, as you mentioned, our numbers have been on a downward trajectory for the last couple of years. And like, I'm not uncomfortable saying that. Like, it's a factual statement, and there's a lot of reasons why that might be. Some of them, you know, influential in good ways from decisions that we've made. Some of them adverse because, like, gestures at everything around us right now. Like, everything is so phenomenally expensive, and people are adjusting kind of what their disposable income budget looks like. And it's a big investment to do this. So I think we've always been very cognizant of that. I think that's why you're seeing, more opportunities from us in terms of incentives and, ways to kind of earn your dollars back in a sense, that haven't been available before. Again, just wanting to make sure that there are ways for people to offset their costs that aren't necessarily results based, just like prize money. You know, so we're offering scholarships, we're offering fee rebates to people who participate and make the makeover. So I think we want to continue to focus on that. We're undergoing a strategic planning process this year, and one of the big themes, you know, is just kind of accessibility and ways to stay engaged beyond, you know, your first makeover year. Like, if you're somebody that's planning to keep a horse long term, like, what is your incentive to stay engaged with the organization? So we've had to have some like real talks about that sort of thing, and how we're going to address it going forward. So we haven't made any hard and fast decisions yet, nothing that's going to impact eligibility or anything like that for the existing competition going into 2026. But I would expect to see some changes to the makeover that are made with an eye towards just kind of increasing accessibility, whether it's something like, you know, another division of competition that has a different set of criteria for people that maybe like missed out on it the first year and want to come back and try, you know, in their second, their horse's second year post track, you know, or the much often are asked about alumni classes that we persisted for so long. You know, we're just at a point where we just need to really be looking at that sort of thing objectively, because it's phenomenally expensive to run this show, and it's phenomenally expensive to participate in it as well. You know, and the thing about horse shows is like, the more entries you have, there's not necessarily an economy of scale there. Like, the costs are the costs, regardless of if you have 100 or 300 horses. You know, so it certainly like incentivizes us. Like, there's kind of a floor of where it's like, you have to look closely at, does it make sense to continue running this thing with the numbers that we have? And so I think that's just kind of where we're at. Like, I don't think necessarily that that's representative of like having gone terribly awry with any of the decisions that we've made. It's just kind of, if you're not adjusting with the times and what your community needs, like, then things are going to be a lot harder for you. And so I think this is just RRP adjusting for the times and adjusting for what the community needs.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about, you know, alumni engagement, because, like, you know, obviously I can't look at my own experience since I now work here. So I'm extremely engaged, like more so than most people. But like Lee, you know, Lee, I think you're like a model RRP graduate citizen, wow. Right? Like you're going you. On yes. and you're going, yes, thank you. Going on into open competition with your horse and like, mm-hmm. you know, doing the thing and then, you know, kind of keeping us in the loop and staying engaged as far as like still participating in the Facebook group, and you've volunteered and you've gone, you know, to when Tip Champs and RRP partnered. But yeah, like there's not a ton of opportunities, Lee, for you and Finn to really like come back and do stuff.
Yeah. And I would love to, so let me know. But it's, gosh, that's such a big thing to try to figure out for the organization, I'm sure, because there's a lot of moving parts there, and what would the parameters be? And, you know,
yeah, it's definitely not as easy as like, we'll just add a couple days of open competition, because that's going to get out of hand really fast.
Right. You know? Open competition for how many disciplines? So,
and everyone is going to want a different level. So, you know, it's not like we can add like, oh, here's a 2.6 and a 2.9 and a 3 foot and a 3.3 and a 3.6 all in the hunters, you know, at differing levels of experience. Like that all just doesn't work. So,
right.
Yeah. It's a big one.
Well, and it's the facilitator that we've been working with for the strategic planning process, like paused at one point, you know, during an interview or kind of like facilitated activity. And she was like, man, you guys, like, this is complicated. You know, and I think like everybody that sits down to go through one of these processes is probably like, oh my God, this is so complicated. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think in this particular space, kind of like the nonprofit space in the aftercare industry, and, you know, as a nonprofit, like our customer is an animal that cannot advocate for themselves. So we have a lot of secondary customers who, you know, are the race owners, the breeders, the trainers, the people that are involved with the horses through transition, and the kind of quote unquote end consumer on the other side that is ultimately going to take on ownership of these horses. And all of those people have a kind of varied level of personal interest in this whole thing, and trying to accommodate for that, and also just kind of fitting in the greater aftercare landscape to make sure that like we're not duplicating efforts, and, you know, we're not wasting resources going after something that another organization already has in hand, which is, you know, the perfect example of why we've been kind of resistant to adding alumni classes, is because Tip and Take Two have some really great options, and why reinvent that wheel? So it's, yeah, when you have, you're existing in this space kind of as an organization and as an industry, you know, speaking of the aftercare industry, that is, kind of literally in the middle of these kind of other industries, and trying to kind of chart your way forward is complex. So like you've got so many different entities that need something from you. And sometimes like they're at odds with one another even. So it's been quite an undertaking. I would be lying if I said like I hadn't like just kind of like looked at the whole thing and been like, I need to go take a nap, because I just like
that it's been a lot valid.
To have going on in the background of our normal like routine of things as an organization. So I'll be like feel very good when it's done and approved and we have like the kind of seal of approval to move forward on stuff.
Yeah. Well, especially because it wasn't really a routine makeover. I mean, like we had the challenges that you outlined earlier, but like we swapped our entire Saturday format around. So we were mm-hmm. a little bit charting new territory there, because we thought we had a decent idea of how it was going to go, but you don't really know until you actually do it. So we're trying to juggle, you know, more things going on. And then also, yeah, like you said, in the back of your mind, strategic planning going on, and you're thinking the whole time about like, what is the future of this event going to be?
Yeah.
So yeah, when you look at it in that light, like I think we did pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've gotten better at this over the years, particularly since being in a leadership position and not looking at, you know, when something doesn't go to plan or when something goes sideways on you, like it's gotten a little bit easier for me to see the kind of like bright side in things, and, you know, or just kind of simplifying it down to like, well, we learned some stuff. We won't make that mistake again. You know, and you a lot of things, like we got a lot of questions about like, how's this going to work with the new format and everything? And it's like, well, I have it charted down on paper and I think I've thought of everything and we're just going to have to see what we get. Like, and that's just, it sounds flip, but that is the reality of running events and making changes. And, you know, it pretty much worked, but we also know there's some scheduling things that need to be tweaked around and kind of the flow of things in each individual championship that need to get ironed out, and we'll come back next year and, you know, maybe we'll get it 90% of the way there and then we'll find something else because we changed something, you know, on the front end that also needs to be adjusted. It's like events are in particular kind of living beings in that regard, and you just kind of have to work with what you get.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we're all accustomed to working with, yeah, things that have a mind of their own. So that works out for us. So I feel like the unofficial motto of the RRP could be something like, come for the makeover, stay for the education and the services. Because I think most people know about the RRP. I mean, they call the makeover the RRP. They think that is the only thing that we do. But of course, there's so much else that we're doing on the side, and there's always demand for additional services. So what can we expect for the organization looking ahead, not just makeover related?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that's, well, there's a couple of like themes that are emerging in just kind of the aftercare space. And I was kind of talking about how many different organizations there are and what our specific mandates are. And I was saying in another interview the other day, like, organized aftercare, quote unquote, in North America is kind of reaching this point of maturation where, you know, we're all kind of somewhere between 10 and 15 years old organizationally, except for like some outliers, like, you know, TRF, I think, is about 40, New Vocations is 30. You know, there's a couple of longer standing organizations, but, you know, in terms of like this, like definitive industry, you know, it's about 10 to 15 years old. And so we're all going through these strategic planning exercises and trying to kind of chart like, okay, we got some stuff done collectively, but it's also not enough. And so like, what is the next step towards that look like? Collectively, traceability is a big thing, wanting to understand more about the kind of life cycle of the thoroughbred after it exits racing. And how we can capture that information. I think RRP is kind of uniquely positioned to contribute to that through horses that are coming through the makeover and the information that we're gleaning off of those horses. But we certainly have the free horse listings on our website. We'd like to bring back the Thoroughbred Sport Tracker, and those are all things that we could leverage to help kind of fill in the story of what that life cycle looks like. So I would expect to see us contributing to that in some way, shape, or form. Another thing that gets talked a lot about is some kind of way of identifying who else is working in the aftercare space beyond the traditionally thought of nonprofit adoption facilities. And, you know, as an organization, we are very aware and have been beating the drum for a long time of like, there's a lot of individuals that are working as resellers, as listing agents, you know, that may or may not make their living this way, that are really facilitating the transition of these horses. And so how do we get to a point where, you know, we have a horse in front of us that is ready to retire and we need to pick up the phone and call somebody? How do we know who those people are and who's doing good business and that sort of thing? You know, what exactly we call this and what it entails is a little bit of a work in progress, but, you know, for lack of a better word, some kind of accreditation process for resellers and listing agents, you know, people that are a huge part of our industry, but kind of fly, you know, under the radar, not intentionally, but just because there isn't a counterpart to TAA, like for those people. So I think we'll see some movement on that front. And organizationally, you know, we're still very cognizant of the fact that the thoroughbred sport horse needs a breed association. So I think the types of services that you would see associated to a breed association. And I think that some of these things, like, you know, identifying who our resellers and retrainers are, would be part of that. But that still figures prominently in kind of how we're going to move forward, is like making sure that we can do all these pieces and, you know, ourselves as an organization or as part of the kind of greater collective, but who's going to kind of pull it all together and document all of that and really kind of truly serve as the breed association for the thoroughbred riding horse. It's still a big gap that needs to be filled. So I would expect to see some movement in that space as well.
So just a couple little things.
Yeah. Just 3 years, no problem, done and dusted, and we'll move on to the next thing.
Right. But I mean, yeah, this is like, this is what we've learned about the strategic planning process, is it's not necessarily a to-do list. It's a bit of a roadmap, and it's up to us to figure out how to get there, which is kind of the fun part for us. So yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, remind listeners where they can go to learn more about the Retired Racehorse Project and what we might have coming up in the future.
Keep it locked into therrp.org and our social channels. We are on X, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, all the things. So please keep it locked in there. Engage with us in whatever way you feel comfortable, and more to come.
Well, thanks very much, Kirsten. We'll see what's coming up pretty soon.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Traveling with your horse this fall? Don't let a roadside breakdown turn into a Halloween horror story. With US Rider, you'll get nationwide roadside assistance made just for horse owners, covering your tow vehicle and your horse trailer. And right now, you can save 20% on new memberships during our Halloween special with code USROCT25. From flat tires to dead batteries, US Rider keeps you and your horse safe, wherever the road takes you. This spooky good deal won't last long. Visit usrider.org today.
Well, we are back with our new vocation segment, and we have with us Amanda Grace from the Lexington facility. And Amanda, you just came off the makeover as well.
Oh my goodness. It was the best week, but I think I'm still slightly wet from all of that rain.
Oh my God.
But yeah, we had an absolute hoot once it dried out.
Yeah, you know, I am always impressed with that horse park and how fast it does dry out.
Yes, thank goodness. But yeah, although, we had so much fun.
It made for a nice full water complex on the trail course.
I was a little concerned that he wouldn't go in the water, but we had so much practice in the puddles hacking over to warm up that the water was no problem by then.
Oh, yeah. He was like, yeah, whatever. I've already done this. I love that. And now you competed as a team, right?
Yes. So my 12-year-old daughter, Grace, and I competed in a team doing trail.
I love that. So in the trail pattern, you guys swap out halfway, right?
Exactly. So for the preliminary, I did the first half, and then there's a mounting block exercise where you get off and get back on again, but the teams would switch out riders there. So she did the second half.
That's awesome. What was your favorite obstacle?
I wasn't sure how he was going to do with the teeter totter bridge. And then in the finale, it was like, you'd get on it and it would like roll forwards. So I wasn't sure how he would do with that, but he handled that like a boss. He didn't even hesitate. So that was really cool.
Oh my God. What a guy. That would scare me. Like if you step on something and you don't expect it to roll, like it always feels like a gotcha to the horse, but like, it's always great when they handle it.
I was stunned by how well some of the horses handled some of the obstacles, because I was like, if I wasn't expecting that, I would spook.
Right. Yeah. I'd be like, no, screw this. I'm out of here. Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, that's such a good sign, you know, of the relationship that you guys built with that horse, you know, that he's like, I got you guys. Like, this is fine.
Yeah. He was like, I got it. Don't worry about it. So, we'd originally, I'm an eventer, so we were supposed to be going for eventing. So, and I think the training that we put into eventing and all the cross country work really did well for us for the trail.
Yeah. And I bet you'll see, you know, a result vice versa too. Like he'll be more confident from the trail stuff that the cross country won't bother him. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound like anything bothers him, but he'll be nice.
Yeah. No, I think It was really great cross training in both regards, because I'd never done trail before, but he got an injury, so we couldn't do the eventing, but we were able to switch over to trail, and it worked out really well. So he landed in the top five, which was so fun.
Oh, that's awesome. And especially to be able to share that with your daughter too. That's really cool.
Yeah, she actually did the finale. She rode him in that. So
For the whole thing. Oh, that's awesome. Good for her.
Yeah, you don't swap out in the finale. So I just got to be mom and got to video and watch them go around that course like an absolute boss team. So it was really fun. And we landed in the top team. So it was good.
Awesome. Oh, well, congratulations. Yeah, and it's too bad. I think I saw you like once in passing and was like, Amanda. And like that was about the extent of it. I did not get any socialization time this year, which was a real bummer, but I knew you were there.
I was
somewhere.
Literally bouncing because we had our event too. We had our RRP adoption event. So I was literally because we're 15 minutes on the horse park. So I was literally like zipping back and forth constantly. So,
well, it's good to be busy, they say. I don't know who they are, but they need to change their tune on that one because I'm still hungover. So, oh dear. Well, Amanda, we were curious at New Vocations. There is, I think, something that tends to happen when we're getting new retired racers. A lot of people will start by focusing on groundwork just to make sure, you know, like, okay, if you've got control of the feet on the ground, let's establish that before we go in the saddle, you know, and see if we have control of those feet there. And sometimes I think we fall into a little bit of a rut of trying to decide like when the horse is ready. So how do you determine when a horse is ready to just, you know, get up in the saddle and go to work?
Yeah. And I mean, it is such a case by case basis, because some of these guys, depending on what racing bonds they come from, some of them have done and been handled so much and they've raced so much. You know, we have a war horse right now that's done 75 races. And then we have some unnamed two-year-olds who've done absolutely nothing. So obviously, you know, each one's going to be quite different, especially depending on what routines they used to at the farms that they're coming from. But I really like to get to know them on the ground, and that makes it just sets us up for success. And we do want to do that first ride, and we want to get the videos. We take all of the horses out on the trail course. So one of the first things we do is to take them out on the trail course in hand, and we can just gauge like how ready they are for a rider to ride them through the trail course. And some of them don't bat an eye, and like my horse just go straight over everything. And others need 1, 2, 3 sessions to just absorb it and get desensitized and figure out that it is okay and build that trust first.
And I think sometimes the challenge is like being able to read, you know, and we've talked to some of the other New Vocations trainers about like, what do you do when you feel like a horse is bored, you know, and that might be a good one to be able to learn to read a horse, you know, of like, okay, this horse is kind of over this session. He's mastered, you know, whatever skill we're working on. So what are some of the indications you look for, you know, that a horse is like ready to move on? Here we go.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of these guys, most of them are so young, they have a little bit of ADHD. So if you try and drill something for too long, they're over it. So we definitely try and kind of keep things in bite-sized portions. We're not going to be doing anything for more than 15, 20 minutes at a time just to make sure that we keep their attention, because when they do get bored, then, you know, they start thinking, well, what can I do to get out of this situation? So we always want to end on a positive note before it does get boring. So, and a lot of it is just, you know, building that relationship and knowing your horse and being able to read how they are feeling about the situation. And you want them to be, you know, in tune and enjoying it and not trying to figure out how to get out of it.
Yeah. I think that's a good reminder for all of us in general, like keep the sessions short. Cause I know I'm prone to being like, that was cool. Let's do it again. Lee, I don't know how you are. You're probably much nicer than I am.
No, cause my girl is the same way. She would just go and go and go. So that is always a good reminder to keep it short and sweet.
Yeah. I like the bite-sized chunks concept.
Yes.
Yeah. Some of those 2 or 3 year olds that, you know, you try and do 20 meter circles for 20 minutes and you're cooked.
Right. All right. Speaking of things that are not bite-sized chunks, the adaptable horse that you've selected for us, this girl is a chunk. She is not bite-sized. This is a nice big bodied girl. Tell us about Honor It.
She is so cool, and I would love for this girl to find some kind of Western ranch trail job and see her go to RRP and do that. She's just so cool, and she's so level-headed. She's got such a great brain, and I mean, it's like riding a couch.
Yeah, she's super big bodied. Like, she's just like really deep through the heart girth and just like a nice like stock horse kind of look to her.
Yeah, she's very stocky, and she's one of the very few that I've gotten on and ridden around bareback. I think there's a video on there of me riding her bareback because she's just so comfortable. She's like a couch, and she's so chill about it too. So she's one you can pull out of the field, had a few days off, doesn't matter. You know, hop on her bareback and go on a trail ride, and she loves it. And she's there for a good time, but she's so chill and level headed about it too.
You've said my love language, which is pull out of the field, and it's the same horse.
Yeah,
I do not have time or facility to be working with one of those hothouse flowers that has to be in work every day. Like, that is not my jam. So yeah, this looks like my girl. Oh yeah, here you are, bareback. This is fun.
Oh yeah, there we go. Yep. So yeah, so she's super army friendly. Like, you know, if you're busy and you work full time and you want a horse that you can just enjoy and you don't have to worry about having in a strict ride 5 days a week program, she's fantastic because she's up to you. If you want to hang out all day and do nothing, she's down for that. And if you want to go hop on a trail ride out of the field, she's down for that too.
Oh yeah, maybe look at her on these trail obstacles.
Maybe it's time you add a mare to your gang, Kristen.
Yeah, you know, it's never the mares I'm worried about. It's the reaction of my stupid geldings. Like, is in most scenarios, right? It's the men we're worried about. Sorry to our male listeners, right? Like,
no, absolutely.
Yeah, the smooth brains.
Yeah, they'd be like, oh my God, it's a girl. So, yeah.
She'd be darling in a Western saddle, though.
She really would. Cute. Oh, Amanda, you can do the thing I wish I could do, which is hop right on bareback. I am not that talented. I just watched you do it in this video. You're very elegant. I would have either fallen off the other side or just like boofed off the side of this horse and then fallen back on the block. So well done. Oh, she looks very comfy.
It's very comfortable. Like, there's a big area to kind of hop onto. So.
All right. Well, remind listeners where they can find Honor It and all the other adoptable horses.
Yes. Yeah, so you can find us at newvocations.org. We have all of our adoptable horses that we have evaluated online. If you see a horse that you like, you can click on the link and it'll email the trainer directly, whether it's me here in Lexington or any of our other trainers at our other locations. And I always recommend you become an approved adopter before you find a horse that you love. That way, when you do find the horse you love, there's no delay and you won't miss out on them.
Perfect. All right, folks, get those applications in. You heard it from Amanda.
You can find our show notes and links to today's guest on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Retired Racehorse Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram at hotgirlsummer.ottb, and that is girl with a U. And my email is rbeamer95@gmail.com.
You can find me on Instagram and Threads at The Horseback Rider, and my email is kristen@horseradionetwork.com. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products and U.S. Rider, and of course to our partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, at horseradionetwork.com. And please rate, review, and subscribe to the show as it helps us grow and keep bringing you all that off-track content that you love.
Remember to always embrace your chestnut mare
and cowside leg.